inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio. Glad to have you with us today on the program. Walker Wildman here on this live edition. The show is hosted each week by myself and Rick Green here on American Family Radio. Well, we got a lot of things to cover today, but let's turn our attention to the scripture. Proverbs chapter 2 is where we are this week, verses 6 and 7. For the Lord gives wisdom, from his mouth come knowledge and understanding. He stores up sound wisdom for the upright. He is a shield to those who walk in integrity. That's Proverbs chapter 2, verses 6 and 7. That's our scripture for the week. Couple of events we have coming up that I've been mentioning over the last few weeks. The Activate Summit, we're excited about that. That's coming up June 12th through the 14th. And then we have two events in the fall, both a weekend with AFA and AFA at the Ark Encounter, which we're also doing the Creation Museum. So if you want to check out any of these events, the most pressing one is the Activate Summit because registration ends mid-April. But you can visit afa.net/events, afa.net/events. That's where you can find out all information about upcoming AFA events and register at each one of these events coming up. Also, we've got several tours coming up, spiritual heritage tours, both domestic and international. This year, we're doing Washington, D.C., Williamsburg, and Boston, with Boston coming up in October. And then in early next year, early 2026, we're doing Footsteps of Paul and Israel, back-to-back tours, separate tours, but they're back-to-back. So if folks want to do both, they can. So if you want to check out any of these spiritual heritage tours, you can simply go to wildmangroup.com, wildmangroup.com. And check out the dates, the pricing, all the information, the itinerary, and we'll be excited to see you on some of those trips. All right. Today, and I did take a trip yesterday to Washington, and I was actually at the White House yesterday, and we met with several Christian leaders from around the country, with the White House Faith Office, and got about a three-hour briefing on all the things that they're working on. And so some exciting information. Hopefully I'll share that in an upcoming episode. Maybe I'll write an article about it as well. But they are laser-focused on a lot of the issues that you and I care about, whether we're talking about adoption, religious freedom, abortion, restoring the natural family unit, man, woman, a lot of that they're working on domestically with the domestic policy. So pretty exciting stuff, and I'll share more about that hopefully in the coming days, and maybe I'll pair it with an article or something. I said before, I've said multiple times, the problem with inflation is not interest rates. Inflation is not because of interest rates, low interest rates, if you will. Inflation is because of overspending in Washington. And then I also have said that the inflation will not come down until the government spending comes down and you deregulate the economy. The Fed is not going to bring down inflation unless they just want to crash the economy. The inflation is going to come down because of reduced government expenditures, all right? And that's what we're seeing now beginning to happen. And deregulation is happening just out Bobby brought this in now. Manufacturing surges in February, tripling the growth forecast. All right, so manufacturing is up because of President Trump's policies in the early days and weeks of the administration. And he's setting the tone for the years ahead. Also, energy prices are down. Gasoline is below $3 a barrel in dozens of states, 30-plus states, I believe. And it's down in the 240 range in a lot of states, like Mississippi. So energy prices are coming down. Inflation actually cooled a little bit in the February numbers. So I think this is just going to take a little bit of time, but we're already beginning to see some of the benefits of the Trump economy, if you will. Let's play a couple clips on this. So President Trump he's done multiple interviews, but he did a press gaggle on Air Force One over the weekend coming back to Washington. But let's listen to President Trump talking about the issue of bringing costs down, specifically regarding inflation. Let's listen to clip one.
I will tell you what is smart. When I took it over, eggs were through the roof, and now eggs are down 35% over a short period of time. And other things, fuel, gasoline, energy is down, way down. Oil is down to $65 a barrel. It was $82 a barrel. And when energy comes down, pricing is going to come down. Prices for groceries, et cetera, are going to come down. So, yeah, I think we're setting a good table.
All right, so there you have it. That's President Trump talking about oil prices and oil prices coming down. I'll never forget these economists and these commentators that make statements like I played last year about oil will not go below $80 a barrel. I don't see how oil will ever go below $80 a barrel. Well, under Biden, for sure, that wasn't going to happen. But look, oil's down to $66, $67 a barrel, depending on what type of oil you're looking at. But, you know, Brent crude's at $70 a barrel. Let's see. Another crude oil is at $67 a barrel. So, it is possible to bring these energy prices down. I mean, this notion that you know, energy will never go below this amount is wrong. It's wrong. And President Trump has proven that. And I think it can go lower. And I know that sounds crazy, but I think energy prices can go even lower than they are now. And the energy companies, they make huge margins when energy prices are high, but it's killing the American consumer. There's some, talking points that these energy companies put out that, well, if energy prices are really low, then we don't have any money, any margin to reinvest in infrastructure. Well, okay. Assuming that's true, that's for the private sector to figure out. All right. That's for the private sector to figure out. But I do agree that there needs to be some major investment in our refining capacity, all right? Because we're at maximum refining capacity as it stands today. A lot of these refining facilities haven't had a major facelift in 30, 40 years, and that's a problem. We haven't brought a new refinery online in a couple decades. So to me, that's a problem. And if you think, well, we're moving away from fossil fuels, so we don't need any more refineries. Well, that's not true. That's not true. There's going to be a lot of things in the economy that still use fossil fuels, even assuming we shift and embrace this whole EV thing, although I think it's a little premature to fully lean into that. That whole arena has a lot of holes in it and a lot of problems associated with it. So, I think eventually we probably will be a majority electric vehicle market, but we're not there yet, and I don't even think we're close. So there's going to be a place for fossil fuels in our economy for a long, long time ahead, decades ahead, And to think that we don't need to reinvest in infrastructure and refining capacity, I think it's a little short-sighted. So oil's down, and I think that's why inflation is also down, because energy prices are down. One more clip before we go to our break. This is I keep getting Treasury and Commerce mixed up, but this is Commerce Secretary. No, Treasury. Sorry. Treasury. Too many secretaries. There's like 26 cabinet positions or more. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent was talking with Breitbart about the shift away from government money to private money and all that's involved with this free market approach that Trump is taking. Let's listen to this clip.
One of the reasons I came out from behind my desk and asked President Trump if I could join the campaign, then when he asked me to be in the cabinet, was because I was so alarmed by this high level of government spending. We've never seen anything like this. Highest level ever when we weren't in a war or in a recession. So the Biden administration relied on this blowout spending, back to the mainstream media. No one criticized it when they were doing it because it was for the great and the good. It was for green programs. It was for this. It was for overseas engagement. Now what we're trying to do is do a course correction where we bring down the government, we deleverage the government and re-lever the private sector. And we're going to do that by cutting spending, the lowering interest, we'll get a natural lowering of interest rates. And then on the other side, as we re-lever the private sector, we plan to deregulate the banking system, which was one of the things I talked about at the Economic Club of New York last week. So as we allow the bank, as we unshackle a regulated banking system, they can lend to the private sector, and especially Main Street, which has been overlooked. So small regional banks, small banks, community banks. And so as the government comes down, the private sector will go up. Government will shed excess labor, and there's plenty of it, and then the private sector will pick it up.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. So the shift away from the government sector to the private sector, it's the only long-term sustainable plan here, all right? Because clearly what's been going on the last 4 years is unsustainable. I mean, it is the definition of unsustainable, because look at our government deficits. And by the way, the feds, they've kept rates the same today. Powell, I don't know how much longer we're going to be able to take this. I don't know how much longer we're going to be able to take the Powell keeping the rates flat where they are. And here's why I say that. There's broad implications to Powell not lowering rates. And it's not spurring up inflation again. That's not the threat here, all right? If you think that interest rates cause inflation, you're wrong. You don't properly know the issue. $7 trillion in deficit spending under COVID is why we have inflation. We don't have inflation because of low interest rates. Now, did the 0% or 1% interest rates, like right after COVID began, did that have some role in inflation? Maybe a little bit. But look, the vast majority of the reason we have inflation is because Washington, D.C. spent like drunken sailors, okay? And so Powell thinks he's in control. He thinks he's the arbiter of inflation, and it's his sole job to bring it down. When I'm telling you this, Powell's been hiking rates for the last 2 to 3 years, and inflation is just as persistent today as it was 2 years ago. So just look at the data. Powell is not bringing down inflation. Donald Trump is bringing down inflation. Because they're cutting out the dumb spending, they're cutting down, they're lowering the deficit spending, they're actually talking about cutting agency budgets, and they're not passing $1 trillion spending bills that just go into this artificial propping up of the economy. So Powell's got a little wiggle room here, we'll give him 6 months maybe, but he cannot maintain this insistent, persistent, stubborn personality of we're not lowering interest rates until we're at 2% inflation, when they're not in control of interest rates, they're not in control of inflation to begin with. We'll be back in a few.
At At the Core podcast are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to The Core here on American Family Radio. Walker Wildman here with you. I don't know if you guys have been keeping up with this this whole people going after Teslas. I mean, this is shocking. And maybe we'll spend some time to talk about this on a later show. But this is political terrorism. And people are having their Teslas burned to the ground. They're having them keyed in parking lots. Entire dealerships are being burned to the ground. All because Elon Musk, the founder of Tesla, is associated with President Trump and working in the administration. I mean, this is just astonishing. Maybe not surprising, but just the fact that we've gotten to this point where political terrorism is mainstreamed is rather shocking and disturbing. And, you know, we don't see any of this from the conservative side. You know, if a CEO is, you know, cozies up to Obama or Biden, you know, conservatives aren't burning down their businesses. It wouldn't be appropriate. It would be wrong. But somehow this has become normalized, and it's a really big problem, that Tesla is dealing with. So I feel really bad for these folks that are affected. And the FBI and the local law enforcement, they're going to have to really clamp down on this because you cannot allow this to become normalized and to continue, because there's just broad implications here. And it's domestic terrorism is what this is. And so,
That's what the AGs label it as.
Yeah, they're going to have to clamp down
officially
on this.
Domestic terrorism.
Yeah, this can't continue. It's unsustainable. And it shouldn't be this way. We should be able to have political differences, ideological differences, without burning each other's businesses down. That's a fact. All right, let's jump to our next guest. We have on with us now Dr. Don Sweeting. He's Chancellor of Colorado Christian University, and he's on with us now to talk about something they've been working on along with the Heritage Foundation called the Phoenix Declaration. Dr. Sweeting, welcome to the program.
Great to be with you, Walker.
Well, give us a little backgrounder about Colorado Christian University for those who've maybe heard of it in passing but haven't looked and read up about it. Tell us a little bit about the university.
Colorado Christian University is one of the best university stories in the United States right now. We have an in-seat residential liberal arts program. We have a large online program. We also have a high school online academy. We are conservative Christian, convictionally Christian school. We believe our model of education is competence, character, Christ-centered faith.
Amen. That's encouraging to hear.
Walker, what's interesting too is we just made the Wall Street Journal top 400 colleges and university list, and we're also in the top 10 most conservative universities in the country. So it shows you can be really good academically and conservative, live by a conservative worldview.
Yeah, that's right. And there's a real hunger for that. I mean, there really is. There's a shortage of conservative and specifically Christian-leaning universities that adhere to the Scripture and the inerrancy of the Scripture. There's a big hunger for that, and I think that hunger is going to continue to grow. And we're just thankful that there are universities out there like yourself, like Colorado Christian, that offer that alternative to maybe the more secular government-run institutions. One thing that you worked on, you helped actually shape with in conjunction with the Heritage Foundation, is the what's called the Phoenix Declaration, which of course Phoenix, Arizona. Give us a little background on this declaration, and then we'll jump into some of the core tenets.
Yeah. So, well, we all know that we have a real mess in the public schools and in our universities. And we had two wake-up calls this past year, the past few years. The COVID pandemic was a wake-up call for K through 12 education, where parents got to look under the hood and they realized things are not right. October 7th was a wake-up call for higher education, where many Americans got to look under the hood and realize that things are radically out of joint. So the Phoenix Declaration grew out of an attempt by the Heritage Foundation to cast a new vision for a new administration for public education. Some of the best stories right now in education in America would include the rise of homeschooling and the Christian classical school movement, and they're wonderful. Problem is, 80% of our students still go to public schools. So we can't abandon that altogether. So Heritage brought a group of people together for a policy retreat back in the fall, last fall, to talk about, you know, what if we could shape the vision for public education, what would it be? And we all know that education is the cornerstone of individual opportunity, family flourishing, national prosperity. But children should have access to high quality education, and they don't. I mean, all the signs from the public education right now are not good signs. You talked in your last segment about, you know, the spending and everything. We spent over $1 trillion since the founding of the Department of Education, and it's not fulfilling our mission. And that's probably the saddest thing, because the students are the victims, and, you know, they come out and they can't read well, they can't do math, we're dropping in terms of international standing, and, you know, bottom line is we're not fulfilling the original mission of the Department of Education. So it's one thing to say stop, you know, and you hang up, you put up your hands and say, don't go across this line, but it's another to say, we just need a new roadmap, a new compass to set the vision for K-12, and that's what Heritage did with the Phoenix Declaration.
Yeah, this is good because to your point, you know, it's one thing to oppose something or to say this isn't good, and that there's a place for that. But it's a whole nother ball game to actually offer alternatives or offer solutions to the way things are structured today. And I'm thankful. I think our movement, the conservative movement, has grown in this area. I think we've grown in the ability to say no, stop, this isn't good. But we've also grown in our ability to shape the future and to cast bold ideas and bold visions. And we got to be able to do both and do so equally.
I don't want to minimize the stop, because, you know, parents became alarmed at seeing, getting letters about transgender bathroom use, let alone COVID mask rules, the LGBTQIA agenda, and the ideologies that have dominated so many classrooms, and they want their kids to learn the basics, you know, reading, writing, arithmetic, and they're not, you know, so we're declining in all the scores that we need to be rising in. And so we're at a moment of national reset. And what President Trump is doing is he's not just dismantling, he's bringing strong reform for these areas that are so critical.
Yeah, I heard yesterday, I was at a meeting, and someone described the education crisis that we're in as, you know, one of the greatest civil rights issues of our day, or maybe not the greatest, but they definitely described it as a civil rights issue of our day. And I agree with that because of the implications here. Because when you look at, like, the outcome of a child and the statistics of, like, what the trajectory of their life will look like based on their education, it's astonishing. I mean, the role of education in America on the future of one's life is heavy. It's not the ultimatum, it's not the end all be all, but it plays a huge role in the trajectory of our young people's lives. So we gotta get it right. And to your point, we're spending record levels of money here, right? So this isn't a money problem. You know, you could argue that there's some funding issues here or there, but largely speaking, we're spending a lot of money, record levels of money, on education. So it's more than just about the money. But go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, you know, yeah, it is a civil rights issue. I've also called it an education depression. But when we're undermining the kids' ability to succeed. So I'll give you two vivid examples. I have four children. One of them teaches preschool, and she had to go through training to teach at her preschool. And they were told, you know, they have to do the whole DEI, talk about gender transition surgeries, choosing pronouns, all that systemic racism. And of course, then they were also told, you know, you can't sing songs that are politically incorrect, like Old MacDonald and Shenandoah and America the Beautiful or the national anthem. This is in preschool, you know, and then I have another son who was with an accounting firm, and he went and did summer training at the public school system in our area. And they gave the whole firm a lecture before they turned them loose on the students. And they said, you know, you can't expect students to live by white supremacist standards like being on time, doing homework, doing excellent work. And my son and his colleagues are looking at each other like, we are setting them up to fail.
Yeah.
So it's bigger. It's a civil rights. It's bigger than a civil rights issue.
Yeah.
And it has to change.
Yeah, that's right. And to your point, this has implications of the future of America. You know, what generation will preserve this great bastion of liberty? And if we don't teach them to, then we're setting them up for failure. So yeah, you're right. There's broad implications here on the education topic. So let's jump into kind of the weeds, if you will, a little bit on K through 12, because that's the real target, if you will, yeah, of this Phoenix Declaration. You go through some kind of core tenets here. The first one is parental choice and responsibility. So let's talk about that. There's a lot of kind of fear mongering amongst the teachers unions that school choice is a threat to the public education system and to the teacher's job, but that's not necessarily true. Talk about parental choice and responsibility.
Right. This is the first of seven core principles laid out in the Phoenix Declaration. And it just says parents are the primary educators of their children and should have the freedom to make decisions about the children's schools and their education. And it's recognizing something that's in the scriptures, you know, that the children are given to the parents. They're the primary educators who entrust them then to the school teachers. And if teachers start to, you know, not disclose things to the parents and don't respect, you know, what parents are trying to do, it just gets all backwards. So this is setting that standard very clearly. It's not just a Christian standard. It's a common sense standard.
And that's the school choice. And when I talk school choice, I'm not just talking about moving from public to private, but our public to homeschool. But school choice also involves moving from public to public, from public school to public school, maybe across, you know, county lines or city boundaries, because the competition is good for everyone. And that's what you're getting at when we're talking about, you know, challenging young people and having standards and we show up on time and here's how we're going to do our work. These are all things that improve everyone's life and everyone's environment. And school choice, creating that competition, makes these different schools, public schools too, not just private, it makes them compete for the students, compete for the parents when everybody's standards is being raised.
Well, I wish that's how the public schools looked at it, but they don't. They look at it as you're taking our money away from us.
Yeah.
And that's the primary thing that drives them. But the competition is good. And if they have to be upfront about what's happening with their scores and you compare it to other things and you're doing bad, it's going to cause some people to lose jobs. It's accountability, which is the second point in the statement. It goes on to talk about transparency and accountability. Schools should be transparent with parents about what's being taught and how their children are performing. No more hiding things from the parents. And again, it's another common sense standard of education freedom.
Yeah, and that, you know, that statement, and I've heard that before about, you know, if school choice is about, you know, pulling money away from our teachers and our administrators and defunding the public education system. And that's just flat out not true. And also that type of argument is also missing the whole picture here, because this is not about making sure that every district gets X amount of dollars. It's not a money game, a shuffle game, a monopoly game. This is about making sure that kids are getting the best education possible. Any argument about, you know, well, you're taking money away from us. Well, that's not what we're doing. You're taking money away from yourself because there's competition. And if people don't want to come to your school, there's a reason for that. And they ought to have the choice to do that. So I think school choice is a major tenet of really fixing a lot of these issues.
Yeah, it just opens the door for families, you know, to, like you said, gives them an array of options to homeschool, to not be penalized for that, to parochial school, not be penalized for it, to do a different public if you want, and then of course classical school.
Yeah, yeah. This is excellent. Once again, we're talking to Dr. Don Sweeting. He's Chancellor of Colorado Christian University. We're talking about the Phoenix Declaration. This was a partnership done with the Heritage Foundation, and Dr. Sweeting is one of the core kind of minds and brains behind this, along with others that put this together. But this is offering an outline, an in-depth outline of how we should move forward and how we should think about public education. And look, folks, the education system is one of the longest standing systems in our country. Our founding fathers established some of the first early universities. The Bible was the central textbook. Our founding fathers understood that we need an educated populace in order for the preservation of liberty. This is about more than just having head knowledge. This was about people understanding why they're created, what their role is, and how to preserve the liberties that we have. So we're going to come back in just a few minutes with Dr. Sweeting. But before we jump into this next break, Dr. Sweeting, tell our folks about Colorado Christian University's website, how they can find out more about it. Maybe they're interested in sending their young people there.
Yeah, ccu.edu. And we are located in Lakewood, Colorado, right at the foot of the Rocky Mountains. Again, Christ-centered higher education, transforming students to impact the world with grace and with truth. Convictionally Christian, convictionally conservative, solid academics, an island of sanity in a sea of higher education chaos.
Amen. CCU.edu. We're talking to Dr. Don Sweeting. He's the chancellor there at Colorado Christian University. We're going to be back in just a few minutes to wrap up this discussion on the Phoenix Declaration and some of the final tenets of this great document, this great plan forward, this path forward for America's K through 12 education system. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Backed by popular demand, the AFA Easter button is here. The bold new stained glass design features the cross at the center under the message, "He is risen." This beautiful design tells the story in one line. It's a conversation starter, so you might share the saving truth of Jesus' death and resurrection. A 10-pack of buttons is $15. 10 or more 10-packs are just $7 each. Order today at resources.afa.net. That's resources.afa.net. He is risen indeed.
Hey, have you considered becoming a Great Commission partner? If you do, you'll be joining others who believe like you and are determined to defend against those who want to destroy God's institution of the family. You'll also receive some great benefits, like full access to AFA Stream, a monthly subscription to our magazine, access to exclusive donor events, and more as our thanks for your support. Please stop by afr.net/donate today for all the details. afr.net/donate.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Walker Wildman.
Welcome back to The Core here on American Family Radio. Glad to have you back with us on the program. We would love for you to subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Jumping back to our guest that we have on with us, Dr. Don Sweeting. He's the chancellor for Colorado Christian University, and he's on with us now talking about the plan and the future for K through 12 education. Dr. Sweeting, welcome back to this program.
Great to be with you, talking about a very important topic.
Absolutely. Yep, the future of our children and our grandchildren and their education. Let's jump back into this Phoenix Declaration. So the third tenet, if you will, our pillar is truth and goodness. And this is very important because it's not, these things are not relative. So tell us about that tenet.
Well, it just says students should learn that there is objective truth and that good and evil exist. And subjects like science should be grounded in reality, not in ideology. I mean, talk about, I mean, it's so basic common sense, but it's been lost. And when it's lost, it undermines everything.
Yeah, this has been lost, and not just in pockets, but you know the relativistic type teachings that there is no objective truth, and here's everybody's opinion, and then you just pick your path. That's really done a lot of harm to not just to the education system, but harm to individuals. because young people are growing up and they're feeling like they don't have a purpose. There's record levels of depression and anxiety. People are confused on fundamental biology, like, hey, what's a man and a woman? So if we don't restore the truth and goodness aspect of this, and the fact that those things are objective and not subjective, a lot of these other things that you guys are talking about aren't going to come to fruition.
Yeah, and this descent into subjectivity is really a problem. I mean, if it all depends upon if you define reality, there's no common basis for educating your kids at all. If you define, you know, what gender you want to be, your biology, and math, what real math is, and you know, creative spelling. How's that for an interesting area? You know, there's not wrong spelling; it's just creative spelling. You lose your ability to communicate, let alone to advance science and rational discussion.
Yeah. Yeah, and other nations are probably laughing at us because
they are.
They are laser focused. They are laser focused, like China and other nations. They are laser focused on world domination, and they know that education is a part of that.
Walker, here's the interesting thing. So I have my second son has been teaching in China with a Christian mission organization, and his classes, you know, he's got these students, and he came to me and basically said, "Dad, you know, the classrooms there are more conservative than they are in the United States." He's taught in the U.S. So here we have a communist country. I mean, they believe in male and female and reality and everything, and they're more conservative than the United States. Now, you're old enough to know this is crazy.
Yeah.
This is upside down. Something terrible has happened here because it you know, they bought in. I mean, China's bought into an ideology that's state dominated, but when they're more conservative than the liberal, post-liberal, anti-liberal West.
Yeah.
We have work to do.
Yeah, and the reason that is the reason they have any conservative leanings in their education is because there are just parts of reality that are undeniable that are required for success in the world. And China realizes that because they're realist. They're pragmatic in their approach, even though we don't agree with their government, you know, top down approach and dictatorship. But some of the things that they're doing in education, they're smart, if you will. They've got street smarts when it comes to the future.
And the Russians are doing the same thing too. And sometimes Putin does this too, where he just says, you know, at least we know what a male and a female is. What's wrong?
Yeah.
With the liberal West. So we've lost our bearings.
Yeah. Let's move to cultural transmission. This is another area that you guys cover.
This is what I hammered in the forming of the statement too. I just said transmission has been one of the key bits to a solid education, and it's been forgotten in the universities and in the K-12 schools. And the statement says that the central purpose of education is to transmit wisdom and our cultural heritage to the next generation. Every student should learn about America's founding principles, the Western and Judeo-Christian tradition, and what Matthew Arnold called the best of what has been thought and said. We were explicit about the Judeo-Christian tradition because that is our tradition. Not everybody in the United States upholds that, but that's how we were founded. And we need to know about that.
Yeah. Yeah. And you want to tell folks, look, the reason America has been a bastion of liberty and prosperity and freedom to the world, and one of the greatest nations in world history, is because of those underlying tenets, those underlying values. And if you don't like them, well, that's your opinion. You're entitled to hold that view, but that doesn't mean you get to destroy what we have. If you want to go start your own country or move to communist China because you sympathize with them more, you have the freedom to do that. But this blessing that we have here, which is almost undeniable, unless you deny reality, people want to just destroy it because they don't like it.
Well, there are many people listening, you know, and you know, with your car, you care about your transmission working. If you have a broken transmission, you got big problems. We have a broken transmission problem. And Ronald Reagan said, you know, we're one generation away from losing freedom altogether if we don't transmit the values that made us who we are. And so this is about getting back to that central purpose of education, transmitting the best to the next generation.
Yep. Hey, last thing that I want to get your thoughts on is academic excellence. Academic excellence. How on earth do we get to a place of academic excellence when we're talking K through 12?
Yeah, well, you get, start by getting rid of DEI, because DEI undermines academic excellence. Equity is bringing everybody down to the same level, and it's disastrous for education. C.S. Lewis talked about this in his writings long ago. And it's, we want equality of opportunity for every person of every race. But this is about schools prioritizing rigorous curriculums in core subjects that fosters academic excellence.
Amen. Hey, Dr. Don Sweeting, thanks so much for joining us. This Phoenix Declaration is exciting. We love kind of getting into the weeds of things like this, because as believers, we have to be thought leaders. We have to be leaders in culture, leaders in government and society. We can't just be doing what everybody else says. So we appreciate you guys over at Colorado Christian University being leaders on this issue.
Thank you. Great to be with you today. Thanks for what you do.
All right. Appreciate that. That's Dr. Don Sweeting. He's chancellor at Colorado Christian University, ccu.edu. And the whole topic today has been the Phoenix Declaration. This is a partnership with the Heritage Foundation. And very, very important that we lead on this issue, because what education do we have without biblical education? What knowledge do we have apart from God? And I answered that question over the last few days. We have no knowledge. We have no wisdom. We have no discernment apart from God, our Creator. So we have to retether the Bible and Christianity to our education system, and the two cannot be separate. Otherwise, you get what we have today, and that is this secular humanist type education system that is woefully off track and leading children and young people towards really a path of destruction. When you wholesale cancel the Bible from being included and being a central part of our children's education. So appreciate Dr. Don Sweeting and him coming on to talk about that. And we have linked to the Phoenix Declaration on the show page on AFR.net on today's episode, the 19th of March. All right, jumping in to a few other topics I want to get to before we wrap up today's show. These judges weighing in on and trying to do these nationwide injunctions on with President Trump, this has gotten out of control. And this has been a problem for some time. This isn't a new problem under this 47th administration. This has been a problem for some time, even the first go around. And here's what we have. We have, and we're going to talk to Philip Geragi in the next few weeks more in depth on this, but you have district court judges that are issuing nationwide injunctions, which is nationwide applicable rulings on various Article II executive branch roles and duties that President Trump is carrying out. And one of the most recent ones, although it seems like there's a new one every day, is this deportation flight of gang members, illegal immigrants, gang members, criminals, the deportation flight down to El Salvador. And this judge tried to jump in and halt the flight down to El Salvador, but thankfully the plane was already over international waters when the ruling came down, which means it's non-applicable because it's outside of U.S. territory. And so thankfully the flight continued. The gang members, some 200 of them, were deported to El Salvador. But this abuse of the judicial branch is going to have to be addressed here. And I felt really good going into this administration with the Supreme Court where they are ideologically, but they're going to have to get some backbone here. They're going to have to get some backbone, because the fact that these rogue judges have been using nationwide injunctions for years now, and the fact that they haven't been swatted down by the Supreme Court, slapped down by the Supreme Court, is a problem in and of itself. And look, I get it. Sometimes these nationwide injunctions benefit conservatives. They benefit people who are ideologically right-leaning. There were a few of them under Biden. But the reality is, in large part, these nationwide injunctions are very problematic constitutionally and legally. And here's why. Here's a basic argument for why nationwide injunctions are faulty, problematic, and should not be used by any court other than the Supreme Court. And the reasoning is because these courts, by definition, circuit and district courts, by definition, have their own jurisdiction. All right? So the whole reason you have a circuit court is because that court is responsible for that circuit. All right? Whether we're talking First Circuit or 11th Circuit. If you want to talk about district judges, the reason these district judges at the federal level have districts is because that's under their purview. That's under their domain. That's their jurisdiction, the district. And all of this is as outlined by Congress. Congress, according to the Constitution, is responsible for the establishing and the framework of our federal court system. From the Supreme Court down to the district court level, the federal Congress, House and the Senate, through statute, are responsible for establishing the framework here. If, for example, Congress wants to add another circuit, right? They can pass a law that adds another circuit, and then they would establish how many judges are going to be on this circuit, and then it's up to the president to appoint. But nationwide injunctions, which is when one judge applies a standard across the whole country, to me, it contradicts and runs counter to the whole purpose of having a Supreme Court. The reason you have a Supreme Court is because multiple districts or circuits have competing and conflicting rulings. Well, who decides that? Well, the Supreme Court does. That's why they're there, by definition. And so in my opinion, no court should have the authority to issue a nationwide injunction, a nationwide applicable ruling, except the Supreme Court. That's the core purpose of having a higher court, a final court, the Supreme Court, is so that the nation can operate in uniformity when it comes to these rulings. So that's the basic reason, and we'll have Philip Drage on to talk more kind of legalese, but and what the history is here. But nationwide injunctions are very, very problematic on multiple fronts, with that being the primary front and the primary problem with the nationwide injunctions. But the federal court has been weaponized, all right? Weaponized largely, 90% plus, against conservatives and constitutionalists. And then let's talk about the Supreme Court. Because this is infuriating, folks. All right? Justice John Roberts puts out this political statement yesterday criticizing President Trump, criticizing Congress, not by name, but as a sideswipe, and kind of backing up this rogue judge that is stepping outside of his lane. And my problem with John Roberts is, John Roberts, every time John Roberts has a chance to go to bat for the leftist and the Marxist, he does. And it's infuriating. Justice Roberts, the Chief Justice, where is the leaker that leaked the Dobbs case? Oh, we don't know yet. Well, why not? So I think Chief Justice Roberts should focus on who leaked the Dobbs opinion and stop putting out political hack statements going after President Trump.
Preborn celebrates that Roe versus Wade has been overturned. Roe has been responsible for the slaughter of over 63 million babies. Now the decision to abort a child will be left in the hands of the states, and sadly, abortions will continue in the most liberal states. Over the past 16 years, Preborn has positioned their clinics in the top abortion cities where 50% of abortions occur. Preborn's work of saving babies' lives continues at an even greater level as they save babies' lives and defend their centers from the radical hate groups who want to shut them down. Preborn's response is dependent on you, the pro-life community. Be a part of rescuing lives and changing hearts for Christ. $28 sponsors one ultrasound, and $140 will help to rescue five babies' lives. Dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or go to preborn.com. All gifts are tax deductible.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.